Chicago. So, you know, when you were given that award, and again, I'm sure that you've been honored several times, what did that mean to you? Because I'll just share with you one of the first times I took my first real estate classes. Well, I took my first real estate classes while I was in college at Northwestern. But after that, I took the preparation for the exam classes at the Chicago Association of Realtors. And in that day, when you would walk in, there's this great, you know, wall of leaders of the Chicago Association of Realtors. And you probably understand, I'm sure people have told you, the impact of seeing all of those Europeans and then your picture. This is clearly before Zeke. Your picture on that wall, I'm sure inspired a lot of people. It certainly inspired me. We all know your name, whether people, anyone who has a real estate license who's ever run into the Chicago Association of Realtors anywhere, they know your name simply because on that board, it had to be, I don't know, 50, 60, I don't know, Europeans, and then your face there. What did it feel like? You know, I do at some point want to talk about, you know, your tenure there, but talk to me about getting that award. How did that feel in 2017? You know, clearly 20 something years after you were the lead of that organization, what did it feel like to get that award from Carr?
I'm gonna be very candid.
Please.
It was nice. As my friend Vosky said, after 80 years, I'm getting an award. It was exciting to be there. But I have no problem in saying I earned it. It was truly earned. The well over 40 years of being a member of the Chicago Association, the Illinois Association, and the National Association, and served on each of board, I'd earned it because I'd asked for us to have a seat at the table and be properly represented when we sit at those tables and not just so awed at sitting there, but bringing something from the community that we come from and we serve. And if you were there for that speech, I tried to bring that out too. I'm very proud of being a realtor, of being a realtors, of being a part of the real estate community. But any of us that get there, we have earned it.
I agree. So talk to me again. So you go from the Dearborn, so 1966, you get your license, which is a feat in itself. 1971, you lead the Dearborn Real Estate Group. 1975, you're part of the NAACP. You're just a leader, clearly. You're just a leader across the board. And then in 1989, you decide to become the first, or I'm sure you just didn't decide to become it. But what led you to become the first Black president of the Chicago Association of Realtors? What was the impetus to that? Taking on another challenge while having other challenges, I'm sure. Why take that on?
Well, first, let me correct you. I was not the first.
Okay.
Marion Maynard was the first.
Was he?
In 1977.
Interesting. 78.
And I can explain the historical way of him getting to that position.
Please.
At the time, the realtor organization had what was known as five districts in the city of Chicago. Two on the south, southeast side, southwest side, the west side of Chicago, the Loop, and the north side. And so every 5 years, each one of those regions had a selection from their region to become the leadership of getting the chain to become the leadership of the Realtor Association. Winston Kennedy of Century 21, Kennedy Ryan Monagle in Hyde Park, I think they're no longer in business. Winston died a while back, but he was then the first vice president of the Southeast. And he stepped out of that position, and Maynard was pushed in. We had to push Maynard into the position. He was very leery, and I'd just be very candid about taking the position. We pushed him in, and he became. But there was no doubt in my mind that when I became a realtor, that I wanted to become president, not only of Chicago, but of the state association as well as the national association.
Wow.
But I know that I was not, and I knew that then, that I was not the selective kind of brothers that was going to become a Illinois. So I ran for the Illinois office in 93 and 94. Oh, but I, you know, but we're not able to get Zeke after all these years in that position. But that's what was in my mind, is that we'd get to the top of the hill and not be sitting at the table just being a puppet leader, but a leader that had something to say about the community that we serve and that we come from.
Thank you.
But yes, I was excited to whatever extent it was. As Mother taught me, though, don't get too excited and don't get too low.
Right.
Just right. Keep moving forward.
So I'm going to talk a little bit. I want to go back to Maynard, since you've brought him into the conversation here, which I really appreciate. When I think about, again, some of the pioneers that we saw on that sheet, some of the Black real estate brokers of the past. Again, I'm always really concerned about legacy. I really feel like it's important that we always have legacy as a part of what we're doing, and that we continue to consider the legacy and then wealth building so that stories continue. So our African heritage continues, our culture continues, and people understand and remember his history. Let's talk a little bit about Mr. Maynard. And I see that the sign is out there, it goes on 83rd Street, but I'm not sure if he has family or what's going on, but talk to me a little bit about Marion Maynard and his history and his legacy as a Chicago real estate professional.
Well, Maynard's son, I don't know if he's operating the business at all. And each time I pass, they're not open. Sidney Maynard's his son. Really, I have not much to say about Maynard, only that that he became president of the association in, I think it's 77 to 78. But it really just was not a lot to say about it. Not for me to say about him anyway.
Got it. Okay, well, good to know. So I see you all on this television program with Vernon Jarrett in 1973, I believe that is. And so talk to me about sort of your ability to sort
of... I followed Marion as president of the Dearborn Realtors Board.
Gotcha. So he's first president of that, and then you came in after him.
And I'm talking about the Dearborn Realtors Group.
The Dearborn.
Yeah, he was president, I think, in 72, and then I became in 73, if that's correct.
That's good information. Thank you on giving us some context on that. So you're talking to Vernon Jarrett on a show called Black on Black that was featured in The Defender in this article. Right now, I believe this WTTW is just creating a show called, something Black, and then something Latino. They're just creating shows about that. Mm-hmm. And I know, again, now there's not a lot of programming. There's a lot of content out here, and there's a lot of different channels. There's a lot of different communication levels, but there's nothing on Chicago, sort of the main, channels right now that discuss sort of what's going on with Black people in Chicago. Like, there's nothing that's saying that. We don't have Black entertainment television anymore. How was Black on Black, that television program with Vernon Jarrett, how important was that for the Black community in that day to talk about things they were doing?
Well, Vernon was special. That's number one. Vernon was special in to the extent that he not only had his program, but he was one of the leaders, national leaders in the NAACP. He was part of the AXO program at the NAACP, that development for youth.
I remember that.
And Vernon was very special. I don't know where it is now, the AXO program, but it was at a very high level of bringing out our youth and not only not being just athletes, but being scientists and mathematicians and musicians and everything else. And they'd have a national program to lift those youngsters up. but I'm not hearing much about it today, so I just don't know where they are. But Vernon was a special brother.
So, you know, I'm curious about, again, where you see the future. I think, and I'll just tell you quickly, as I put, again, more context to why we're having this conversation. Right now, there are two things happening almost at the same time. Clearly, people are not speaking to each other. We're not working in a unified way right now. But there are two things happening in Chicago right now, literally announced in the last 90 days. The city of Chicago is working with LISC, and you're working with the Urban Land Institute to create a program called Yield Chicago. Yield Chicago is also an attempt to train young people who have development ideas to work on development in the city of Chicago. And then there's another program, just so happened I became interested, you know, I hear about these things in different ways or asked to participate in different ways. And I'm like, wow, this is interesting. So there's another one called the Chicago Emerging Minority Developer Initiative that is being being supported by the Chicago Community Trust and an organization that I belong to that I am on the board of called the Chicago Trend, which Chicago Trend is a great organization that is funding development in urban corridors, also funding retailers in urban corridors and also funding property owners in urban corridors. So if you have a property in one of these corridors that's blighted, 79th Street, 75th Street, and you just don't have the money to pay those taxes, you don't have the money to improve the property so you can find a renter, and you're doing nothing with it, Chicago Trend will assist. They'll assist also with franchisees. If you want a franchisee, you want to be a franchise, want to be a franchisee, we'll assist you in funding that or financing that. So we're working on, there's so many different initiatives right now. It's like, you know, everyone's trying to do these different things. And so again, I'm always, I try to be a unifier as well if I can, but sometimes, you know, someone's funding this, someone's funding that, all of a sudden you've got 20 people trying to do these different things. What do you think about sort of really getting more young people into development, but not just young people, middle-aged people? We all have now the resources to build and buy in our communities. Again, 87th and Dan Ryan, 87th and Cottage Grove, not owned by people of African descent, those larger power centers. You know, how would you guide some of these people into sort of thinking about becoming developers, owning retail development in our neighborhoods? That might help also with the social unrest and the, you know, the things that have happened. How would you advise some of these young people to become developers and to be interested in that, so we're empowering our community?
You know, history brings us to where we are, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Years ago, you may remember, your dad remember, Jewel was getting ready to leave the African-American community. They were packing, they were gonna go. And Ernest Collins and his brothers had, I think, about three or four stores that they owned and operated. And of course, Ernest was chairman of Seaway Bank. I was trying to say to Jesse and the rest of them that was demonstrating against Jewels, the hell with Jewels. Let's put our $10 together with the Collins brothers' stores, and that be the community stores.
Exactly.
Just recently, Bobby Rush was coming together. What's that group that was moving out of the community? Was it Target?
Target moved out.
Was it Target? Mm-hmm. And of course, his assistant called me, and I said, sweetheart, I said, I don't know why you're calling me to go over. I don't care whether Target stay in the community or not. Right. Well, they have jobs. I said, well, there's been plenty of our brothers and sisters that have had stores, and Cam Beard, who is owner of Cam and Nate, and I've known him for years, he and Betty were very close, and many others are not operating today because of lack of our support, rather than our continuing to try to maintain and keep them in our community. Well, we need to, and I'll say it again, become out of our mental slavery and understand and that there are leadership and there's true leadership, and that we put together corporations, organizations, that we can work together and bring the youth necessary with the help, assistance, and guidance of some of the older factors. You see, I don't want to continue to be, I cannot do what I did 40 years ago. I'm not physically, not mentally capable of doing it. But I should not sit and hold the table and stop you from your growth and your development. And I'm so impressed and proud of you. Have we met before?
Yes, sir. I have met you several times. You wouldn't remember.
Shame on me.
I'm just happy to be around. I'm just happy to shake your hand in that day.
Well, I am happy that we're having this conversation, because you to me have done the work to get where you are, and we're discussing this. And I know that I will be one of your lifter-upters. I'll be working with you because I'm impressed by you. And I'm not saying that for any accolades, but just that I don't find it too quick to be impressed with folks. And as I said earlier, just being interviewed, you carry this between me and the doctor smoothly. You guided us where you wanted us to go. And I'm impressed with that. So thank you so much.
I mean, you know, Frank, you are still teaching at Chicago Association of Realtors. You are still operating your business, which again is all these things really empower the people who see you. You've had 50 years of plus of work in this industry. And just your example is important, but you're still working and you're still able. I mean, you seem very sharp to me and you seem physically able to me right now, that your work is not done. You still have so much to give, as I can see it. And people need your voice. We need your encouragement all the time. And it can just be as easy as this conversation. But I think you're not physically able. You don't necessarily want to do it, but you are not done. And just the fact that you're still mentoring others is important. And I think I want that mentoring to be on a much larger scale, certainly as it becomes to understanding the history of Chicago real estate and the pitfalls, so that no one ever makes any of the mistakes that you might have made, or learn some things to do that you have learned over the last 50 years. These things are so important. So I think you have more work to done. What is the future for Frank Williams? You still have lots of life left. So talk to us about how you envision using all that power that you have, because you have a lot of power by knowing as much as you know.
Well, as I see, just the guidance of the folks who are here with me currently, and they've started the recruiting process, because I stopped recruiting sales agents because I got tired of talking to our folks, and often they come in knowing more than I know. And then they're lazy too, so they don't want to try to do the things that's necessary. You understand? That's getting on the phone, that's passing out the flyers, that's you're doing all the things and learning and going to meetings and negotiating. And I got tired. And then these young folks have started, and I don't know where they came from. Dean's sitting here with me now. I don't know where Dean came from, but he came along with several others, and they're working to get to the top of this. And that's my goal at this point, is to guide them, to protect them, to teach them. And I know sometimes I can be cantankerous and a darn right, whatever it is they want to say, when I get very sharp with them. But I expect from them no more than I'm prepared to give. And that's getting up each day, and that's really going after it. And my patience, I don't have the patience for those that is going to come. And, you know, we were trained to jive and bull jive and all that stuff. But to really come and get into learning the craft and making a mark. So my last year, that's what I'm doing now, because, you know, is to get them like you to move forward, to really put us at the top of this year. We're nowhere near the top of this. But as I've said with Sheldon Goods, and you talk about Gene Matanke, yes, I got a chance to know and meet Gene Matanke and Charles Palmer and many of them, they put their shoes on the same way I put mine on.
Exactly.
They don't know anymore, but they had the bread. They could go borrow the money. And I'm not talking about thousands, but hundreds of thousands and millions to do their development. And then they had the opportunity to fail and then get money to start all over again.
Exactly.
That's what I am aspiring to see to it, that these young folks have the, number one, the guts to challenge the system, you understand, and the banks. And that's why I keep mentioning Seaway. And God knows I'll probably have an account over there, whatever they call them. It'll be Seaway forever to me, the credit union. But I had to move my escrow account from there because they're not a national banking institution anymore.
Wow.
And my first escrow account I opened at our little bank.
That's so, those stories, we have to discuss that more too, and we will. I'd like to have you in on that conversation when we're able to really dive into that a little bit more as we talk about commercial real estate. The financing of it is critical and one of the more important parts. And so we're attempting.
And I got to call you a youngster. Young people like yourself and others that have gotten the training, the engineers and architects, and those who know how to work the numbers. So it's not that we're not qualified. It's that we have not put together the kind of teams to put the pressure on the institutions to see that we get the kind of money we need to do the development.
I think that we really have to have the confidence to go in and say we demand that we're funded like everybody else. Have the confidence to start something, fail it, start something else, and improve. And again, I think they know that the Europeans in the country, in the United States, understand that they have every opportunity to excel and to be pushed forward in this environment. I think, again, it's a mental slavery sort of issue and concern with us as to not to go
mental
into confidence.
Slavery.
You've thrown it out there. And you said it's true.
That's true.
We have to have that confidence that we can move forward. We can find the millions of dollars that are necessary for us to complete these big deals. And that's what we're going to need, and we have to demand it from everyone else. And I think we can right now. And I think there's a lot of people right now, certainly in the city of Chicago, I've seen others throughout the country who are doing larger deals right now and, you know, demanding that the money be, you know, sort of given to developments that make sense, developments that are going to create value and, and guide and help young businesses survive. And I'm talking specifically about commercial retail development.
Yes.
So 50 years, we're going to end with this. You're going to have a phenomenal celebration. What day in 1971, was it January what 1971 that you opened your office?
January 2nd.
Wow. So January 2nd, 1971, the Frank J. Williams Real Estate Brokerage was birthed. And so you're going to have, I know, a grand celebration that we are going to be happy to help advertise and make sure that the world knows using technological tools of today, social media and the flyers and everything else. I will do everything I can to help. So tell Dean that I'll do everything I can to help. What are you looking to? How are you going to celebrate this milestone that everyone in the city of Chicago should be recognizing with you, celebrating with you on?
We're getting ready, I guess, to put together, because that's not a part of my expertise, but put together a group like yourself to be able to plan out something. I have started to, over these 50 years, and I've had boxes of stuff, and you've done your research, but I have a lot more stuff that, and to kind of, on either Facebook and other social media, you know, things, to start putting that out, what we have done over and been involved with over the past 50 years, before we hope at some point this pandemic thing is over with, where we can really put together a coming together, you know, of a nice program. Because I know that in 1986, after I was going out as president of the NAACP, our group put together a very nice program at, what was that room at the Palmer House, the one that, that used to be the Grand, what is it? It was the Pumpkin Room.
The Pump Room at the Drake? I forget.
No, no, it was at the Palmer House.
At the Palmer House, I forget. I remember the Pump Room. I thought that was at that other hotel.
Okay, but anyway, what I want to do is probably, it'll be sometime next year, don't know when, but I hope that this, we have a some kind of vaccination and things of that nature, where we can have a nice party. But we're starting now to put out stuff so that folks will know that we've been here 50 years, and 50 years being in business for whomever it is.
It's a long time.
It's in and of itself, you know, something to be reckoned with. And the fact that we have been involved across the board.
And so we all, again, we have to have people more encouraged to create an organization or some kind of operation that is long lasting. And so how we do that is learn and see what you've done. I am going to be so excited to help you create whatever it is you're going to create to celebrate that milestone. I am also, again, with the Black Chicago History Forum with Dr. Reed. We have events all the time. I'm an archivist and a historian, and so as an archivist, protecting your artifacts is critical to guide young people. They need to be able to see that. Sometimes you can't just talk to them. If they can see this, then it's impressive. So I want to look at your archives, and then I want you to think about who you're leaving your archives to. That's also very important. There are certainly organizations in the city of Chicago who should have that and should be exhibiting your careers, works, all the time, from the Chicago History Museum to, of course, the Vivian Harsh Collection at the Chicago Public Library, where many of my good friends are currently working, and they have Tim Black's archives. The Jusabu Museum hopefully will be expanding and doing better things to expand their archives. So I want you to think about those. We'll talk about those in the future as well. And so how the world continues to know what Frank J. Williams has done, and you're encouraging people globally, not just in the city of Chicago. So I look forward to that. Thank you so much, Frank, for coming on the Transforming Urban podcast and webcast. We really just, this has just been a rich conversation.
You're wonderful.
And so are you.